There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to Alonement. I'm Francesca Spector, a journalist, author, and host of this podcast. Each week, I interview people that I'm interested in, all about their time alone and what it means to them.
It isn't enough to say that you can know yourself by being alone, because there are ways of being alone that below the surface are actually ways of not being with yourself.
You can feel lonely in a room full of people, and you can feel so content completely on your own.
Whatever your age, life stage, or relationship status, we can all enjoy a bit of time by ourselves. And on this show, we discover wisdom and personal stories about how to do that. Because when alone time isn't lonely, it's alonement.
People who are able to feel seen and understood, feel enough within themselves when they're alone, are so capable of giving that to others.
A lot of the cultural discussion that we have tends to be about the adjustments that introverts need to make in order to thrive in our extroverted world. But I think it really goes both ways. I think that all of us need to learn to make adjustments, you know, to find a greater sense of balance.
Jessica Pan is the author of Sorry I'm Late, I Didn't Want to Come, a funny and honest guide to how Jessica, as an introvert, challenged herself to do a year of monthly extrovert-facing activities like improvisational comedy, solo travel, and talking to strangers on the tube. More recently, she's also the writer of the brilliant Substack newsletter, It Will Be Fun, They Said, which chronicles her day-to-day life working at a tiny bookshop in North London. As we discuss on the show, Jessica is almost the opposite to me. She's an introvert who learnt to be more extroverted, whereas I started exploring alonement as a means of dealing with my fear as an extrovert of being alone. But what this following episode touches on is the importance of balance and choice around how we spend our alone time, plus how learning to make new friends can help you fall back in love with your solitude. We also touch on the loneliness of big cities, particularly London, and how Jessica has managed to curate her own tiny village within the UK capital. I learned a lot from this conversation, and I'm sure that you will too. Before we get to the episode, I want to thank our season sponsor, Sensate. Have you always loved the idea of meditation but never quite got on with the practice? Sensate, a palm-sized infrasonic stress and anti-anxiety device, is the friend that you need. I've been practicing things like breathwork and meditation for 2 years, but integrating this little device into my daily sessions, which syncs up your choice of relaxing soundscapes from the Companion app, has helped me discover a new kind of deep relaxation. There are lots of tracks to choose from, including nature sounds for stress relief and soothing sleep rhythms. Visit getsensate.com/alonement for 10% off your first device. I'll also pop that link in the show notes. So, Jessica Pan, thank you so much for coming on the show. I've been enjoying your work for so many years now. I think I actually got the pleasure of meeting you pre-pandemic, which seems forever ago when you were promoting your book, Sorry I'm Late, I Didn't Want to Come. So thank you for coming on the show. It's really great to have you.
I'm so happy to be here, but I also did think that you would never ask me on, because if your book is How to Be Alone and Absolutely Own It, then my book version is sort of like how to not be alone if you don't want to be alone anymore. And so I didn't know if we could meet together, because it seems like they're opposing, but actually when you think about it, they're sort of not. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm really glad that you picked up on that and think it as well, because all this time I have sort of thought they're like mirror images of each other. I came from the place of being an extrovert who needed to learn to be better at being alone, and you're an introvert who's spent a year what's the tagline for the book? It's, you know, living dangerously as an introvert, which I just right. I just love that. And yeah, it's sort of coming from two different directions, which I really like, and I'm looking forward to exploring sort of the fluidity between both those states, which I guess are sort of a little bit set from birth, but also, yeah, as we've sort of explored, like more fluid than you think.
Well, I sort of think of us as like two different hero's journeys, right? Like, but we sort of end up at the same fork. And so you go the fork in the road to learn how to be alone and embrace it. And mine is like to go find as many people as possible, but it's all in the same sort of goal as for, like, you know, fulfillment and happiness. And I think we both realize that, you know, there's that saying that, how does it go? It's like, no one is 100% introverted or extroverted. Otherwise they'd be in a lunatic asylum. So like there's everyone, you need a bit, little bit of both.
I'm just enjoying the two different heroes' journeys. I think I've got the name for this episode there, but yeah, it is true. I think there are absolute, I don't know, caricatures, I guess, of extroverts and introverts. And you're right. That quote is absolutely true, that you would be an absolute lunatic, I suppose, to want to be around people 24/7 or want to be alone 24/7. That's solitary confinement, right? That's what they call like the worst punishment. But yeah, I mean, I think the balance is so endlessly compelling. I think this is sort of episode 82 or something of the podcast, and still it's sort of it's a constant conversation. So yeah, it's really nice to explore like this way of seeing it. And I wanted, before we sort of get sort of further into the conversation, I also just wanted to say I'm loving your new incredibly popular Substack newsletter, which is called It'll Be Fun, They Said. It's so good. And I think you've got such an amazing niche, because you're basically, you know, for those who kind of don't yet follow it, although, you know, it's a rapidly diminishing minority, it seems, given the thousands of followers you've sort of accumulated. But you're chronicling your experience of working in this tiny London bookshop, and you have thousands of readers hooked on your every word of this sort of, like, you know, wonderful, almost like very funny, very stream of consciousness sort of writing. It's so gripping and readable. What's your early experience been of this new medium? I guess we call this medium email newsletter writing. How have you experienced that so far?
It's been really surprising, because I thought about starting a Substack, but I didn't know what I would write about. And I actually had lunch with Emma Gannon, who I don't know that well, but we've sort of met a few times. And we were having lunch with Layla Kazim. None of us know each other that well, but like once a year or once every few years, we'll all have lunch together. And this just happened to happen. And they're both like really big on Substack, and they were talking about it. And I was like, I don't even know what I'd write about. Like, I don't even know. Like, I work at a bookshop now. I could do like that. And they're like, yeah, let's do that. And I was like, okay. I didn't want to think too much about it, so I just sort of like wrote what I felt and what I watch from like sitting behind the till and all the funny people that come in, because I just wanted to entertain myself, really. And I just thought I'd have like no followers really at all. And so I'm so surprised that like people are enjoying it. It's been such a pleasant surprise. And yeah, they're so fun to write, because I didn't want to write a Substack that was about productivity or trying to help people in any way, because I think there's so many of those out there. And we're always told like what to do and how to. I didn't want more tips out in the world, because I love them and I consume them, but I just think it can get really overwhelming. And so I wanted to create something that was purely like pleasure and storytelling. I'm never going to tell you like how to meditate or the best way to like run. I'm just going to tell you like the fun things I see sitting in my little London bookshop and like the crazy people who come in and the fun people I work with. Yes, it's like been a real pleasure project. I'm just really excited to keep doing it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's such a great angle because not everybody reads, but let's face it, all the best people do. So you're getting such a, I don't know, wide spectrum of people coming in to this shop. And it's just, yeah, it's a really, really great angle. And I think it's nice as well. I love that you really were going in for the fun. I kind of don't think we have enough of that, maybe.
Yeah. And I didn't know if people would want to spend money on fun. Not that like you have to, because obviously there's the free option, which most people do on any newsletter. And then there's the paid option. But I'm finding that, well, I mean, we spend money on fun things all the time, like films and books and things like that. And so I don't, kind of like what Emma says, like, you know, why shouldn't we value writing that's online just because it's online, as opposed to not on a book or on a birthday card? It's funny because I just think most people, there's this big dream of working in a bookshop, which I didn't realize was such a thing, but it really is a thing because people come in and they're like, this is my dream and I would love to do this. And I'd always felt that way too, but, and I never thought that I could do it. And I just sort of like kept walking by the same bookshop every day and just sort of, I'd love to work here. Like, what would that be like? And they had an opening and I did an interview and the owner, I think I mentioned this in the newsletter. I asked her like, what is it really like to work in a bookshop? And I thought she'd be like, oh, you know, it's like stressful or you don't make much money or like some sort of cynical answer. And she just sort of stopped and paused and said, it's enchanting to work in a bookshop. And I was just like, I'm hooked. I want to try this out.
And you're coming up to your anniversary, right? You started working there in January this year.
I did. Yeah. Yeah. So this is my first Christmas working there, which is like super cozy. Like we've got candles out and the Christmas lights up and I'm just like super excited.
And is it as enchanting as she said?
Yeah, it is, because nobody comes into a bookshop in general, I guess. I'm sure somebody could come into a bookshop being miserable, but most people come in and they are happy. They're looking for a gift for a friend, for a loved one, a children's book, or something they're really excited to read. So everyone who comes in like brings something and they want to chat, really. It's not really this just like fast interaction that you get in most places where you just want to get out as soon as possible. And so it's like this just lovely spot where people come in and, you know, we'll chat to them and they'll chat to us, but then they chat amongst each other and they give tips on books. And it's really not stressful to talk about what you're reading. So you don't have to talk about the news or what's going on in your personal life. So there's this way to connect with people without this pressure.
Yeah, which is a nice way to find people day to day, I suppose.
Yeah. And as Layla was saying, that she's like, well, what are you going to do when you don't like work in a bookshop anymore? Like, what will you do with your Substack? I guess she was like thinking about the future. And she's like, what if you're a millionaire someday and you're not working in a bookshop? And I was like, if I'm a millionaire, I'm still going to work in a bookshop. Like, it's the best job. It's so fun. Like, I'll definitely work in a bookshop if I'm a millionaire.
You're going to be responsible for so many job applications. I know. Waterstones is going to be inundated. It will be the new Goldman Sachs.
So true. But I do think there's a huge difference between Waterstones and indie bookshops, because you get to choose a lot more of the books that go into indie bookshops and the ones that you get to like hand sell. Whereas I think Waterstones has kind of strict rules about that.
That's even worse, Jessica. I think that there's going to be queues outside every tiny bookshop in London.
That's what I've heard. I don't actually know. I've never worked at Waterstones, but I think it is still a great place to work, but you don't get as much like control.
Yeah. Maybe approach the indie ones first if we're going for this. What has sort of accidentally become a very aspirational lifestyle?
I know. It's very funny. Yeah.
So you're super busy, I think, with this job. And I know that you're working on a new book as well. What does alone time look like for you at the moment? Do you get much of it?
So I don't work at the bookshop full time. I work there like 1 or 2 days a week and some evenings for events. So I'm definitely not there all the time. So most of my days, I would say, are spent alone because I'm writing either the Substack or I'm working on the next book and doing research. So that's a big part of my time being alone is just sort of work and also like walking around London.
Walking around London, just sort of aimlessly or?
No. Sorry. yes.
It sounds very poetic. Just like, you know, sort of rambling like a romantic poet around
London. No. I'm just like, I just walk everywhere. I don't like, I mean, I will take the tube or the bus, but I, like, in my own sort of circle, I am always just, I don't know, like, my my Aura ring is telling me that I'm doing loads of miles a day, apparently, just going from spot to spot. And in that time, I'm alone. So that's what I mean by that.
Oh, I love that. So what's too long a walking distance? But
I think it's more a weather thing, actually. Boring enough. Like if it's sunny, you can do like a few miles. But if it's like that horrible misty thing that just ruins your makeup and hair and you just feel gross, like I'll probably get on a bus pretty soon. But it is quite a fun way to pass time. But I would say I've been thinking about this in a different way recently because I had COVID about like 2 weeks ago and I did self-isolate, even though I know we don't have to anymore, because I didn't want to give it to my husband and I, you know, didn't want to kill someone's grandmother. And we live in this tiny London flat that's, I think it's two bedrooms. I stayed in one bedroom the whole time, basically. And it was brutal. It was like 9 days of being alone without any physical contact or being in the same room as anybody. Cause you know, I wasn't going to like go out and eat in restaurants or walk about London. And I was so miserable and I felt so fragile. Like it was just so brutal. And when I got out, I did tell my husband, I was like, I would not do well in prison in solitary confinement. Like I cannot live a life of crime. But then again, you know, I'm recovered now a few weeks later. If you looked at my day, it wouldn't look that different, right? I'm still in my house. I'm still like drinking a cup of tea. I have my laptop, but it feels completely different because it's a choice. Whereas with like that COVID isolation, it was like, you can't leave or you shouldn't leave. So to me, the word alone, it's a privilege when you choose it, but like a complete prison when you don't choose it. Like, so I guess for Sorry I'm Late, I Didn't Want to Come, the book where I tried to meet as many people as possible. At that point, I didn't want to be alone. And I was like, didn't have that many friends and didn't have, you know, a full-time job and I was a freelancer. And so that felt more like a prison and I wanted to break out of it. But at the same time, like, I love it when I choose to be alone and it feels like so luxurious.
There's a line I picked out towards the end of your book where you write, even though solitude is important to me, I like it on my own terms. And I think, you know, everything you've just said there and, you know, that idea of having it as a choice and on your own terms in the way that you want it. I'm kind of grateful to you for sharing that perspective because I think, you know, thinking as an extrovert who formerly was scared of time alone, I think I used to almost shame myself for not liking it as much as introverts said that they liked it. So I kind of, right. You know, I was always like, oh, like, that I just should be able to enjoy this in any form. So it's good sort of, you know, hearing it from an introvert who my book is almost a love letter to introverts and this magical superpower that I've always sort of coveted. But it's good to hear that nuance and that actually it's not more is more. And it's not just something that there aren't any rules around if you're an introvert. It does, in a way, we all sort of have that in common. We all, I guess, need solitude on our own terms because otherwise that's when it slides into loneliness, I suppose.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And I think that I kind of feel like you and I together could solve like the world's loneliness problem. Like if they gave out a set of our books together, then you like, I feel like it's completely solved, right? Like, oh, you're alone and you want to make friends. Here's how. Oh, you're alone and you want to be able to like enjoy it. Here you go. Like, don't you think?
I think we should. I think we should just form like a kind of a two-woman committee. You know, probably just let the government know that we're available for any such consultations. And
yeah, just sell it as like a two-pack. And it's just, I just think, you know, that with like, I don't know, probably a bottle of water and some chocolate, everybody would be like taken care of. I think we did it.
I think this is something very beautiful. We've just started here. And we could run it from the corner of the tiny bookshop, maybe.
Oh my God, we'd sell it there, obviously.
So yeah, but you know, before we sort of launch onto our world domination, because I think that that's where this is naturally going. Mm-hmm. I want to sort of take this back to when you decided to write, Sorry I'm Late, I Didn't Want to Come. For those listeners who haven't read it yet, I would love to hear the background about why you launched into doing this, because this was for you quite a counterintuitive thing to decide to be an extrovert for a year. So you talk me through the initial thing that sparked that process.
Well, I am a hardcore introvert. Once I figured that out, because I sort of thought everyone in the whole world was like that. And we all secretly hated being in like busy pubs. We just sort of had to do it, like eating vegetables or something. I didn't realize that other people enjoyed that, or like, you know, Glastonbury and things like that, like being around tons of people or going out every night. I hate doing that. Like that's, if my diary is completely full of like going out every night, even with people I like, I find that really stressful to just even think about. And so I sort of spent my life telling myself, no, you're an introvert. So like you don't do things like, you know, improv comedy or give speeches or go to networking events or make tons of friends or host parties and things like that. It sort of came to a head when I realized, actually, I'm really lonely because I keep embracing this label that I'm actually using as an excuse to say no to anything that I don't want to do, anything that gives me anxiety. Like I'd switched jobs. I was working from home. A lot of my friends had left London. London can be a really lonely place because even if you have a good friend here, they might live in a totally different part of London. It could take like, it can be faster to get to Paris than to get to some parts of London from other parts of London. And I just felt like, why don't I try to do all these things that I've been like running away from at speed my entire life, like performing and meeting lots of people and yeah, like all these things like improv comedy. Things that were my nightmares, because maybe I could learn from them and maybe I wouldn't be as lonely. And I thought I'll just do this for a year and see what I can learn. And that's sort of like the jumping off point.
Yeah. And I think, you know, obviously the book did really well. What's the stat in Susan Cain's book, Quiet, that 1 in 3 people are introverts. So, you know, that's a debate about whether it's even more than that. But I think that not only, you know, 1/3 of the world's population are interested, but also that I think that that problem of metropolitan loneliness, I guess, and I think it is quite specific as well in some ways to the city of London, because we're all just sort of gaslighting ourselves into pretending it's one big city.
It's 3, I think. It's North London, it's South London, West London. Yeah. What do you think?
What about East?
Isn't East sort of North though? I don't know. I don't know East that well. Is East, maybe it's just, I think it's 4 cities, because I feel like North London is huge.
Yeah.
But like, if I have to go to South London, I'm just like, well, that's my entire day gone.
Yeah. A good friend of mine, she jokes that when I date, I have a catchment area of that does not include South London.
I think that's important. Like, be realistic. Like, if your soulmate is in Greenwich, you're not going to see them.
It's amazing when you hear people. I have a friend who's been in a long distance relationship from London to Barbados for 9 years, but Greenwich is one step too far. I do agree.
It's beautiful to like, I don't know, if I lived in Greenwich, I would be thrilled because you could just stay in that little village. But I'll never come to North London, which is where I think, are you also based in North London?
I'm also based in North London. Yeah. And it's
too far.
It's big enough. And I think also the walkability thing, right? Like, I mean, yeah, I think North London's quite walkable comparatively. I don't know. I mean,
I wouldn't know, but
yeah. Nor would I. But it, you know, it is that weird thing. And I'm the age now, I'm 32. I'm the age you were, I think, when you wrote Sorry I'm Late.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it is, obviously these things happen at different ages for all of us, but there is that sense where probably are at different life stages more than before. There's a time in your life where everyone's sort of studying together, or everyone's sort of in that stage of my only reference point is like at the beginning of the Friends series, where like everyone's in that sort of lost stage of working their lives out. Everyone's there. And it doesn't feel, I think, in your early 30s that everyone is there. Everyone's sort of pursuing quite different journeys. And that loneliness that you speak about, that was sort of something that's so relatable. You know, I think that goes beyond just being an introvert. That was, again, that resonates so much, whatever angle you come at it from. And I think that as well, like even though the book is ostensibly and it, you know, about introversion, it's also got that kind of almost secondary theme, which is so universal, but particularly for Londoners.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I know that it was a really long process and there were many different extroverted things that you tried to do along the way. One of my favorite chapters, though, is when you talk about when it goes slightly wrong, because you decide that you're going to embark on a solo travel experience, which is something that we speak about a lot on the show, but you have a surprise solo travel experience. So you find out sort of on the train to the airport, I think it is, that you're going to Budapest in Hungary. Why was it so bad?
It was bad because, well, first of all, yes, it was a surprise trip, meaning you can buy this deal where you buy a ticket to somewhere in Europe and they just tell you the weather, like what to pack, as in like, you know, a swimsuit or rain or hiking boots or something. And you don't know anything else about it. You can go and you can be in any city. They arrange the hotel and you do not find out until I think like 3 hours before your flight. So you're already on the way to the airport for the flight that you don't know you're taking. And I think I just was not up for Budapest for some reason. No offense to Budapest, because it is very beautiful. But I think I imagined it was the expectations. I was like, I would love to go to Sweden right now or Spain or France or something. And I was like, oh, okay, Budapest. And I had been like kind of recently. And so that was the first thing. And that kind of didn't help. And the second thing was that I put all this pressure on myself because I was doing it for this big year to want to do a lot of amazing things and meet amazing people. Whereas if I had taken that journey just like as myself, I definitely would have enjoyed it more. I think my favorite thing is like reading in cafes and like eating different kinds of foods and just people watching. So I would have like found a cute cafe to do that in, but I couldn't do that for this particular trip for the book because it was all about like meeting new people and exploring. And so I just felt really miserable doing it. And even though I did meet some nice people and prove that I could do it, I felt a lot of pressure. And so I think when you put any pressure on any sort of situation, it kind of takes away the happiness of it.
I've never actually made this distinction, but it sounds like Budapest is almost like an introvert-friendly solo travel experience rather than an extrovert friendly one. I think that you referenced something where different countries have a fun score. I can't remember where that was referenced from, but they have a fun score. Britain being something like.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Like 4 out of 10, Italy being something like 9, but you found that Hungary has a fun score of 1.6.
Exactly. So like the people aren't as open. They're not as friendly. It doesn't mean they're not as nice, but they're not as like openly friendly. Yeah. And it's just, I was thinking about this other thing that's a little bit related, which is that, I swear it is, even though it's going to sound like it's not. I saw Nigella Lawson speak a few years ago, and she talked about, I'm going to totally butcher what she said because I can't remember exactly what she said, but one reason she became a cook or a chef or a cook writer, whatever you call her, is because of the tyranny of the food in childhood. And that, and what she meant was like that she didn't get to choose what she ate as a child and as a kid. And she hated that so much that obviously she's completely like based her entire career around cooking what she wants to cook and eating what she wants to eat and writing about the food that she wants to write about. And I feel similarly about like one reason I like being alone is that I get to choose what to do and what to eat. Or like, I feel like with my family, I never really got a vote. Like my parents were sort of like, we're going to do what we want to do. And so I saw like a lot of films I didn't want to see in the theaters and I had no choice because I was a kid, or we went to restaurants I didn't want to go to. And so part of that thing with the surprise trip, which was really exciting, but ultimately it sent me to a place that I'd been to recently and I didn't really want to go to again that soon. And I didn't get to choose. And I think that was also, so I agree with Nigella, like the tyranny of not getting the choice bothered me, even though that was part of the experience. And I don't love Hungarian food. And I think food for me, food is a really big deal. Like I wanted to really enjoy it and it's not my favorite thing. And I think that, I mean, stupidly is probably another reason I didn't like love it.
I mean, the food sounded awful. I think you talk a lot about like very salty meat.
But it is gorgeous. It is a gorgeous, gorgeous city. So if anyone from there is listening, it is beautiful. And the people were nice. I did meet some nice people there. So,
and you saved me, because if the Hungarian Tourist Board ever wants to sponsor this podcast, then we're safe. We're safe here.
You know what really shocked me is that we sold the book rights to Hungary. And I'm like, why? I mean, I'm really happy, but I'm like, did they read it? And I think that they must have, because I mean, it's a really random country to sell it to. I mean, it's not like one of the really big ones. And I'm actually really pleased with that. I'm like, okay, so they see that I'm like laughing with them, because like it was just sort of this place that I did fail, but it was kind of funny. Yeah.
Have you been solo traveling since?
I have. And I loved it. I appreciate it so much more. I went to Spain though, which probably helped. Yeah.
What's the fun score in Spain?
Isn't it 9? Yeah. I think it's like 8 or 9. Oh my gosh. Spanish people are so friendly. Cause I also just recently was in Paris, which is where I got COVID. And I was like, oh my God, the Spanish people are so much more friendly. And also a big thing for me is like being near water. Like water you can swim in. That is like my favorite thing, is like reading near water and swimming by myself. And so I felt like that was very much like my kind of vacation.
So you were able to sort of channel the introvert side of yourself and the extrovert, because you met people, this kind of pretend extrovert, but you've learned to sort of channel. You were able to meet people when you were out.
Well, I feel like maybe I did like the cheater's version, which is probably the best thing you can do. I think my biggest tip, if you are not great at solo travel or you want to get better at it, is go somewhere where you have a friend or where a friend is, so you can just see them when you want, but you can spend a lot of time alone. And so my friend Lucy was cat sitting in Mallorca. And so whenever I felt sort of lonely, we could go for like fun dinners and like coffee, but then I could still like wander around alone, and I didn't stay with her, so I didn't like feel any obligation to like come back to her or anything like that. So that to me is the perfect trip, is like going somewhere where someone you really like is, but you don't have any obligation to them.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice, actually. It's a bit, excuse the swimming pun, because I know you're just talking about swimming and water, but it's not, you know, it's not diving headfirst. It's not just sort of putting yourself in at risk of absolute isolation. Because I think when you describe Budapest, you say that you had 2 days of not connecting with anyone, and that was, I think you used the phrase crushing loneliness, which we can all feel, you know, that like demotivating loneliness where you're like, I don't have the momentum to even try. And I think that when you know, if you know that you're going to see people, if you know that you've got almost like a backup, then you're not putting yourself at risk. A tip that, I mean, something that I do with solo traveling, I generally book a walking tour at least one of the days, just so I sort of know I'm going to have a bit of a fix of people, which sounds a bit like parasitic, but it's, you know, it's so necessary to get that connection.
No, I think that's a really good idea. I'm going to Sweden next month alone, and I sort of like, what the hell am I going to do in Sweden? Why did I do this? And I have, and it's going to be so cold. I'm going to Finland as well. And so I have booked a tour, which I've never done before. And I'm like, why have I not done this? I think because growing up, like my parents, a lot of our vacations were like very tour based, but it was like, you know, like a 12-day tour where you had no free time, which I hate, obviously, because I hate, you know, the tyranny of yeah. not doing what I want to do. And that was like a constant thing. And so I've always rebelled against that. Like, no, we're not doing anything like that. And now I'm thinking, wait, I don't have to go on a 12-day tour through Sweden with the same 30 people every single day at every single meal. I can go for like one.
Yeah. A theme of sort of moderation. Mm-hmm. And what were your favorite extrovert adventures that you had in the book? If you could pick a couple of them.
I could tell you what I didn't like doing was asking people who the queen was. I didn't like talking to strangers when I was bombarding them, but...
You need to tell that queen story quickly.
No.
For those who aren't aware, it's very funny.
No. It's just that because I had this like massive fear of talking to strangers, which not all introverts have. It's also a social anxiety thing, but I had a huge one. And so I talked to a psychologist who had me ask people really embarrassing questions in public, like people I didn't know. And that was the rest you'll just have to, I don't know, read in the book, or I wrote about in The Guardian, but it's just too embarrassing to recount. But I guess what surprised me is that I really enjoyed improv comedy because it was a way to be creative and out of your head, because you have to really be in the moment. You can't be thinking about like your loneliness or your taxes or your financial woes, and you have to work with other people. So it is this big extrovert activity. And often if you freeze, like they will save you. And I just felt like this really cozy collaborative place that was also kind of scary, but like it was the scary was what made it so fulfilling.
So that was the sort of positive side of exposure therapy.
Yeah. I definitely like think that the year helped me a lot with my social anxiety. Like, I mean, a big part of like the bookshop job is talking to strangers, and I do not have any anxiety around that at all. I mean, obviously if like it's a scary stranger, like I'd be scared in like a dark alley, but that anxiety that I had is gone now. And that is very freeing, because it used to be a huge issue.
And that's amazing. It's amazing to see what it came out 2019. I guess you wrote it 2018, or, you know, it's amazing to see how much that's still positively affecting your life.
Yeah. I mean, I think about like some of the people I interviewed for that book, like every day, because it was just so massive. Like I think because you feel like if you're scared of something or you have anxiety about something, that like you can't imagine that not being a part of your life. But then actually there's so much research that shows if you work on it, or you do things, like you actively pursue changing it, like you can, it's not what I call a personality change, but you can change, because obviously nobody wants to like change the entire personality, but you can definitely become more of an like a social person if you want it to be, or someone who does talk to strangers or hikes mountains. As long as you like pursue it, then it just becomes a part of you, these activities.
Yeah. I heard you on, is it Dr. Laurie Santos's Happiness Lab podcast?
Right.
And yeah. The term that's used there is volitional personality change for that shift. And I also have in my head that a study that said that your personality doesn't change much after you sort of early 30s. So, which, you know, maybe in some ways, but it's really nice to think that actually we're capable of this change. We just need to go out and do the practical exercises as you sort of set out in the book. And I know that you're not being prescriptive, but putting yourself in those situations, you can change. And I guess you've also kind of speaking to you this much on from the book, it's also showing how worthy that change is. Another thing that you described to help you with your journey, that you use the term extrovert mentors for the people that kind of helped you along. For instance, you asked your husband's your husband's former tour guide on a travel thing that he did. Charles, the tour guide. What was the benefit of actually, I don't know, finding these sort of curated extrovert mentor experts? How did that help, as opposed to just sort of challenging yourself or going off research?
Well, I was doing all these things that I'd never done before, so I had no idea how to do them. Like, I didn't know how to talk to strangers, and so I consulted psychologists. I didn't know how to go on a trip and make friends. And so talked to like the friendliest guy I know, which is, yeah, Charles, who, so before my husband and I met, he did this, my husband is English, and he did this big American tour. I can't remember if it was like 10 of them or something, like 10 people he didn't know, but Charles led it. And so Charles like leads these travel groups. So obviously he's like super competent, super confident, can talk to anybody. And he is also like one of those people who's just like super lucky. Like he just is, I don't know. He was just so annoying because he's always lucky. Like things will happen. Like he told this story recently where he like left his wallet and his passport, like he lost them in a forest or something and came back like 2 weeks later and found them. And it's like, what? Like who does that? Like, how is that possible? Anyway, I asked Charles because when you're so deep in your own anxiety or your own feeling of like that these challenges are insurmountable, you have to talk to somebody who's done them, who's on the other side, who can say, no, you'll get there. Like, this is how you do it. Otherwise, like, I don't think you can even imagine doing it. And he definitely did help me. And it was like, it was nice knowing I could text him when I was like alone in Budapest and not knowing what to do. And it was just good having like mentors guide you because I wasn't confident about the steps I was taking. And so it was really great to have these like for the comedy chapter, I talked to comedians, like people who actually do stand up for a living. So that helped a lot.
It's funny. I was thinking specifically about how you were texting Charles while you were in Budapest, because it sounded like it would have been quite isolating. And it was, but I suppose just having someone in it with you and feeling like, okay, I'm isolated in this situation, but not in a broader way. And this isn't unprecedented.
Right. And also, I mean, if we're both on these hero's journeys, you have to have like the people helping you along, I guess. Like it also works like that.
So let's switch this around. So if you're my introvert mentor in this scenario and the introvert mentor sort of serving on this podcast right now, what would your tips be for anyone who struggles to do what you're naturally good at, that spending time alone? What tips would you give for someone struggling to do that?
I would say, I mean, I think this has definitely been said on your podcast before, but if you like, the most fulfilling way to spend time alone is to find what puts you in that flow state. So that's different for anybody. For me, it's writing and reading. For a lot of people, it's like playing music, like literally playing it, like playing the piano or the violin or something. For my brother, I know it's cooking. Like he makes these really elaborate meals. So I think it's all about like what puts you in the flow state. And like I think for my dad, it's like reading radiology textbooks. I don't know why. Well, he's a radiologist, that's why. But like he actually enjoys that. You know, find something that makes time sort of disappear, but it can only be enjoyed when you're alone. That is my biggest tip. And I'd say my second thing is that, which I know I think you also talk about a lot, is to journal, because I love journaling. Like, I think if you gave me a journal and a book and a coffee, I could probably just spend like all day by myself and it would be totally fine. It would be like so pleasant. Unless, like I said earlier, you were like, but you can't leave. And it felt like prison. But if I could leave, that would be like my ideal thing. Because I think it was it Joan Didion who said, like, I write entirely to find out what I'm thinking, what I want and what I fear. I think sometimes when I have to be really extroverted or when I have to be with people a lot for whatever reason, I don't know if it's a big wedding weekend and you're never alone or it's a big trip with your family, I feel insane. And not just because I'm an introvert, but also because I don't know what I'm feeling or what I'm thinking because I've had no time to reflect. I just need to sit down for like an hour and write down what's going on to really feel like grounded and actually understand what I'm feeling. Those are my two biggest tips.
As you say, they are tips that have been talked about before, but it's the way that you justify them. I think it's, you know, especially, you know, with the journaling thing, I relate to that in spending a lot of time around other people, say, yeah, yes, at a wedding or a group holiday. I probably enjoy it maybe a bit more. As an extrovert, I'm sort of like, oh, great. It's like someone's given me like, I don't know, like when you were a kid and you want to eat the chocolate and then it's suddenly Halloween and you get all of it at once. That's an energizing thing. But I don't know what I think. You know, you get to the point where you can't even pick a meal because you're so thinking about the group dynamic, or it's very easy to lose oneself, I think, around other people because it is just so stimulating. So I love how you've talked about journaling as a place to do that, as a place to, yeah, that Joan Didion quote about sort of writing to think. You know, maybe we're biased because we're writers, but I do think that journaling is quite a unique way of getting there sometimes.
Yeah, I don't think it has to be that way. Like, I think it just, I think it would be beneficial for everybody, because if you don't want to do it, like, what are you running away from? Like, I definitely don't journal when I should journal. Like, the times when I'm really resistant to it, I know I'm like unhappy and I don't want to like face that because I don't want to deal with it. And so I think, and often, yeah, with the journaling thing, I'm not really writing about writing. I mean, I am sometimes, but I'm not, mostly it's about like life and what I want and what's on my mind, not really planning projects. So I do want people to know that like they should journal yeah. no matter what. Even if they aren't writers, even if it doesn't matter, I think it's really important to figure out what's inside your
yeah.
brain.
Yeah, it's a separate space. That's good. It's good to sort of hear you like demystify that, I suppose, because I think, yeah, it's a different thing altogether. It's probably not where you write your brilliant Substack. That's completely different space altogether. Have you gained any more compassion for the introverted parts of your personality through this process of trying to be more extroverted?
Oh, because do you think like I was like too self like loathing about it, you mean?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I think that probably initially you were struggling in London, perhaps. Maybe it was, I don't know, maybe I'm reading into this, but I kind of reading between the lines, it was something you almost scapegoated for the fact that you were finding it hard initially to make new friends, or that you were in that state of not being able to change your life. Whereas I think later in the book, you say that you feel like you have a lot more control over your life through being able to adopt those extroverted traits. But yeah, did you come full circle at all in terms of a newfound appreciation for those introverted parts of yourself as well?
Yeah, I think it was when I finally had the power again to like make friends and feel in control of like talking to strangers, or I have to go to a party tonight where I'm not going to know anybody, but I have to go and I'm going to do it. And like knowing that it'll be fine. It'll be totally fine. And so it's like that thing that I keep saying, like, if I can choose it. So I really still value my alone time. Like I said, I'm alone most of the day. But I think before the book, I didn't have someone right away that I could go have coffee with if I wanted to. And I feel like now I have lots of people I could do that with. And it's knowing that and obviously using that sometimes. Before, I didn't have the option. So I think, yeah, I'm still like really embracing being alone, but now I also like know that I do need to like feed that social side of myself. And I know how to do that now.
That's a really powerful thing. I mean, it seems like it should be a natural kind of human thing to have. I always think about if we all lived in a village, as we, you know, as we sort of what did for most of history, and we had that accessibility that London sort of doesn't give us. I think this is also on Laurie Santos's podcast. You described that how you've basically made your corner of London into what feels like a little village.
Yeah.
Is that, yeah, I love that. Is that specifically through making local friends? Have you also prioritized local in that way with people as well as I don't know, normally people talk about buying local, but are you prioritizing local as well?
Yeah, completely. I mean, it's what we said earlier, like I want to start a writer's group, but everyone has to live within like a mile of me. Like, I'm just like, because I feel like, and I, not to be, it's not an exclusivity thing. It's more like, I want to feel like I can see these people whenever we want to see each other, and that I don't want them to feel obligated to come all the way across London to see us. Like, I think that it's hard to explain, because I grew up in like not a tiny town, but like a small town in Texas. And I kind of hated that I knew everybody wherever I went, because I felt trapped, not trapped, but like, I didn't like it. And what's funny is that now that I've been living, like I was in Beijing before, and then I was in Australia, which is like, not like the cities weren't huge, but obviously they're quite big and I didn't know loads of people. And now I'm here in London, and now I'm like, I want to make that for myself. And I think it's once again, like, because I get to choose it, as opposed to just like running into my entire high school class at every, because there was like one Barnes and Noble, you know, that's where they'd be. Like, that's not where they'd be, but like if I went to Barnes and Noble, I'm not going to run into like people, like my ex-boyfriends. So it's nice to like create a community without that, like that I got to choose. And the bookshop is a huge part of that. Like, I see people who come in, because everyone who comes in is local, because it's not like, it's not in an airport, you know, it's not like near a busy tube station. And so everybody lives around there and I see them a lot. Like, I see them at my local cafes. And yeah, I do feel like I just want to, and I have created this sort of bubble. I mean, like, we keep saying this, like the joke of like, I just want to like live in Gilmore Girls because it's cozy. Mm-hmm. It does feel a little bit like that, but in a way that I like, whereas when I grew up that way, I hated it.
That's such an interesting distinction, because I don't know, having to curate it rather than it just being there in a way that feels like it could be a plan B, because, you know, of course we should have these things naturally, that should be just the way that we live. And, you know, it's because we live in London and we've got to struggle to gain that community. But actually the way you've turned it on its head and done it proactively and probably curated friends through your interests and your passions, it actually sounds like a better way of being. You've curated your village rather than being born into it.
Well, I think it was something I've learned through the book, in that, in a similar way of how, like I talk about how I took this class at the School of Life called How to Be Sociable. And they literally tell you, like, you know, if you really want to bond with other people, you need to share vulnerability. You need to be honest and, like, go into deep talk. You can't just talk about, like, the weather or your commute. It really, like, gave me, sort of like honed in on this idea of, you can edit things, as in, like, if you're at a dinner party and there's everyone just talking about, like, their favorite, I don't know, pasta dish recipe, like, that's interesting. It's not deep. You're not going to bond over that. Like, and you don't have to talk about, like, really deep things, but you can be the person who goes, hey, how did you all meet your partners? Or, you know, like, something like not so deep, but like something that will illuminate something and bring people closer together. You can be that person who introduces that. And I think about that now my entire life. Like, well, I want to be in a writing group. I don't know anyone that's running one. I will create my own now. And I just feel a lot more, it's so important. And I also feel like there need to be more people like that who are, like, doing things like that. We all know those people who are, they're just like people connectors. They're always, like, joining people together. And I think the world needs more of those. And so, like, I'm trying to do, like, my tiny part of that.
That's so empowering. And I'm asking you, the moment that we get off this call, whether I'm within your mile radius of London, because instantly that writers group just, everyone's hungry for this stuff. I think you're completely right.
No, but here's what I'm saying. Like, I think you should start your own. And, like, I think that whoever is in Greenwich listening needs to start their own. Like, I think we need to, like, create more.
Oh, poor listener over in Greenwich just getting...
Greenwich is so beautiful. They're actually the luckiest people because they're there, but they don't get to see us, but they get to see other Greenwich people. So
they are. I do, my one exception for Greenwich, I do like getting the Thames Clipper boats over there. But that's a holiday rather than...
I've never done that. That sounds like a fun introvert activity.
Oh, and I highly recommend, honestly, introvert, extrovert. I think it's a really wonderful thing to hop on. I think it's £8 and you go just wherever it takes you, and then you explore a different corner of London. It's a great way to spend a day. To almost return to the idea of introversion and the theme of this podcast, I want to ask what your favorite kind of alone time is.
Yeah, so I think it is reading by the ocean, like in a chair that reclines with, like, a pen making notes and, like, an iced beverage nearby, is, like, the best thing ever. To me, that is, like, heaven. And then you can, like, leave the book and go swim for a bit and then come back. But also, like, probably knowing I'm still going to have dinner with, like, my family or my husband that night later, like, so I don't feel, like, totally alone, like, on a deserted island, because that's what it sounds like, doesn't it? That is pretty ideal for me. Oh, and journaling, like, just sort of, like, being in a cafe and people watching and making notes and just sort of, like, just observing. I find that very fun. And something that you really can't do with someone else.
Mm-hmm. But always that person around the corner to invite for coffee, maybe in that situation as well.
Exactly.
Thanks for listening. I'm really inspired by Jessica's journey, and particularly where it's got her, to what seems like the perfect balance between introversion and extroversion. I'd love to hear what you think. Do get in touch on social media to let me know, or just leave a glowing 5-star review. And remember, you can keep up with both myself and Jessica's writing via our Substack newsletters. I'll leave those links in the show notes. This season of Alonement was edited by Pineapple Audio Production.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.